Welcome to Storytelling with Lindsay Bednar.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's so awesome to finally connect with you. There have been a few hiccups, but we did it.
Absolutely. And can I just say thank you for being human and rolling with all of it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Same with you. Yeah. Seriously, we got back from a week's vacation, four suitcases, and our washing machine was not working.
Of course.
So, just prime timing. So we had to obviously purchase a new one, wait for it to come. So this weekend I'm going to be doing
lots of laundry.
So, I have been so excited to talk with you, not only because of how highly Amanda's always spoke of you, but also, you do so many things that I have been interested in and haven't tried before. And so I want to start with you just kind of sharing your story of how you got into the wellness space. But I'm so excited to talk to you about like specific modalities as well. But if you could just peel back the time as to what made you interested in getting into this space.
That is a wide open question, and who knows where I'm going to take it. I literally have monkeys in my head that just pull me in all these different directions. So stop me when you're losing track, because it probably will happen. I feel like the journey kind of started in 2012, as most people did, as far as going through a divorce. And at that point, I just knew, and actually it's even before that, I remember distinctly saying when I had Cooper was like, you know, a day old or whatever, we're going to do this different, kid, right? Like he's 19 now. And I just remember I always kind of did things different, kind of, do my own thing my own way and not figuring it out. But yet within the boundaries of what society has said, right? And so I just have learned so many beautiful things and met so many wonderful people on this journey. But really, it's like 2012 was the catalyst, as we say, and just dove into what, you know, different things. It, of course, the kids. Cooper was diagnosed with ADHD, and I wanted to do it differently. And so I started with essential oils. Wonderful gateway drug, right? So we started with oils, and that just progresses into, hey, do you know this person? Have you learned about this? And then all of a sudden we're trying brain optimism therapy, right? Like it's just this, hey, do you know this person? And this might be something that could be helpful. And again, it's always us seeking outside of ourselves in the beginning.
Yeah.
Who can help me, right? And it's not at all that. It's, we already know these things. Like I think back now over the last 12 years and just be like, all of those appointments I thought were for the kids, they were for me. I needed to learn that lesson, and they taught me that. They are my greatest teachers by far. So all of these modalities are because either my mom or somebody close to me has utilized them. I think being in the hospital for 23 years, I saw patients giving their power away, and not meaning to, of course, but just like this idea of we've given our power away. Oh, what can you tell me that I need to know to raise my son, right? That's not how it works. We've lost our village. We've lost this connection with ourselves. And so most of the things that I practice and my modalities that I like to share are about getting you back into your body, into the here and the now, so that we can take some action forward and stay connected in that action.
That's beautiful. I mean, there is such an awakening as to how disconnected we've all become from our bodies, from the present. And yeah, I don't know what it was like in the 60s as far as people kind of, you know, moving towards this wellness space, but I feel like this has to be the biggest time in history where everybody's like, no, I actually want to turn back the clock and go back to what is so natural. And it's frustrating that we seem to live in a time where the two sides aren't playing nice in the sandbox yet, which is very disheartening.
Mm-hmm.
So Absolutely. Your experience in the, what was your job prior to? Were you a nurse? What were you doing?
Respiratory therapist.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so I really, that's at my core. I just happened to get into respiratory. My friend Amy said, "Hey, come to school with me." And a week later I started. Like, I mean, I knew enough about, you know, my mom was a nurse and had left that because there was five kids and my dad had started his own business. And so then she became the secretary and helped with the business. So I knew enough about that. My brother is a hemophiliac. And so always been around medicine. When anyone was in the hospital, we all went in and visited, you know, so I was always kind of around that. And it seemed like an easy transition. I also did some home health care in college and they had respiratory issues. And so I was familiar. All of my roommates were nurses, you know, they were going to school for nursing. So it made sense that, oh, I can't do nursing because you guys are, but I could do something similar, which would be respiratory. Because I can't, if someone else is doing it, I'm not going to go there. But I'm going to do something a little bit different.
Okay, so you have to tell me, based on what you just said, where do you fall in the birth order of siblings? Do you have siblings?
Yes, I do. Can you guess?
Well, I think a lot of people would say the middle, but I am the baby, and I very much resonate with what you just said about how if somebody else is doing it, I'm going to do it differently.
Yeah, so that's actually the Uranus on my son when I was born, thanks to Meredith. So I know that now. Uh-huh. But actually I am the first daughter, but second child.
Okay.
And we're all 2 years apart except for the baby who's 4 years younger than the youngest. So we all fall on the same birth years, like even odd, whatever. It's kind of fun.
So maybe mine is more about my birth chart. I have to go back and listen to my reading with her.
I love re-listening to that stuff. Every time I listen, I learn something new, and it's like, it's just amazing.
Me too. Yeah,
this is cool.
I mean, it's embarrassing to listen back to myself so often because I think, especially with that episode, I think I said interesting probably 50 times. But
it seriously, is so interesting.
It was. And everything, yeah. I was like, oh, God. And it was just like all coming together. So many things were just clicking, and I was at a loss for words. So. Uh-huh. Whatever.
The depth that you can get from those charts is just phenomenal and
it
endless.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So your son had ADHD. How old was he when you discovered this? And I want to know about this journey because, I mean, there's not a human that doesn't know how rampant this is in our society now. But I know, especially for teachers, it's something that when I was teaching, we just saw an increase year after year after year. And so, you know, whether people want to deny it or not, there's something going on that's causing
a multitude
of things, I'm sure. But and there are a lot more people that are leaning away from pharmaceuticals to treat ADHD. So I would love for you to talk about what age was he when you discovered it? And then what was that process like?
Kindergarten. Kindergarten. Yeah, already. And again, always had a ton of energy, right? As it's like, it just comes with the penis. I don't know, like the trucks, the drive, the focus that he would have for playing and the, you know, how hard he would play and everything. Like, well, this is just, you know, it's what you do. But we were always outside. Like the kid didn't watch TV. We had a nanny that, you know, would take him out on adventures all of the time. So it's not like the kid sat in front of the TV and was focusing on that, right? Like, at that time, you know, that was, you know, 19-5, you know, very long time ago. And when Mayo gave me the literature that said, you know, this is your kid's future. You're likely to have addictions. You're likely to have this. You're likely to have that. And these are going to be the problems that you're going to face if you don't put them on medications. That's how I read it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to go back and look at that and see what that pamphlet actually said, but that's what I took in. So at that point, then we just said, okay, well, let's explore. What are, you know, you look into things, you start talking to people and they say, oh, well, what about this? And it started with essential oils. We did go. I mean, I worked at Mayo. We went the conventional route, and they said, okay, so here's the form that we fill out. And, you know, I waited that summer because there's no reason for me to put them on in the summer. Mm-hmm. We had the testing done, and it's ADHD. And so, you know, what are our choices? And we kind of looked at that throughout the summer. And then in the fall, when we started school, he started on medication. And for me personally, like, that line for me was, we will try this medication and we will do what the physicians are saying until you have too many side effects and they want to put you on another medication. That was my line. Mm. And I'm pretty loosey-goosey when it comes to boundaries, you know, because, well, we should probably try it. We should probably check it out, you know, but that was my heart. Like, that is my one hardcore. It's like, I'm willing to do it until they want to add something more. So, of course, when you're young like that, you go through these growth spurts. And so we could never find the right medication. And it was just, you know, it was a struggle. So it was probably fourth grade that we'd been on 9 different medications. And, of course, they would all work. Everything starts to work. We did behavioral therapy. We did play therapy. We did, you know, the 6 weeks ADHD groups a couple different times, right? Like, so we're doing all of these things that we think. And, again, they always worked while we were doing it. Because guess what? You get mom in the car with you going to the appointment. We get to go to a fun treat afterwards. The connection piece, right? So what it's taught me is that the core foundation of this is connection and regulating with them. Because during those times when you're in those meetings and going to these appointments and whatnot, you are connected with them and you are regulating with them. Even if you're feeling a little anxious about things, right? It still feels like they're getting what they need. Which is you, right? So in fourth grade, we had a traumatic event happen. We had, in second grade, we moved to our small town that we're in now. And that was a hard transition because it was the divorce. And then we had bought a house. And then, you know, finally we're getting our feet underneath us. We're in our house and we're doing good. And Cooper had changed schools. Went to middle school in fourth grade. And his one really dear friend was killed in a car accident, a drunk driver. And that, I just, the bottom fell out, right? Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, how is he going to handle this? That was really hard. And he, of course, did fine, as kids do, but it's because of his teacher, Mrs. Sexton. She was so fabulous. Of course, I had just started a new position teaching. And so I was overwhelmed with the new position, taking care of the kids, just knowing the emotional weight of this. And truly, this family, I wanted to help them. Like, I needed to help them figure this stuff out, right? Like, this was horrible. This never should have happened. Mm-hmm. And I felt very passionate about that. And in the process, you know, it ended up, we'd forget to take the meds a lot. And so, and, you know, I couldn't even think to bring the meds to the school to let the school nurse do them, right? Because, again, that would have been an option. But, of course, I can't even wrap my head around that. And anyway, by Christmas time, I realized I haven't refilled the prescriptions because we haven't been taking them. And he's doing great. He's doing really well. And he just lost his best friend in September, and it's December. And that teacher had such a wonderful, like, she knew they were close friends. And she just had such a beautiful connection with Cooper. I feel like he didn't need him. Again, he still struggled. Like, if we're doing spelling words, we got to be doing toe touches on the soccer ball in order to learn to remember them. Like, he cannot sit at the table. He's not going to recall it if you have him sitting still. He has to be in motion, and then he would remember.
Kinesthetic learners, which I think so many people are.
Yes.
Which is why the school system does not, you know, and God bless teachers, because so many of them understand that. Even in sixth grade, my daughter's math teacher, who's actually a neighbor, she's fantastic. She has them out of their chairs all of the time.
Awesome.
You know, both because of how all the studies of how we learn, but also it's just a lot of sitting during the day. So
it is.
I love that. They get very creative in ways of getting kids out of their chairs.
I was given diffusers to the teachers to release, like, a diffuse peace and calming, and, you know, trying to get Cooper to use the ball to sit on so he could bounce and whatnot. Cause I've seen this at home, you know, and he didn't, I don't want to be different. Mm. He didn't want it. He wants to fly. So I under the radar, mom. I don't want it. I don't want to do it. So then he doesn't. And then that, again, affects, you know, how you're learning. Extremely bright kid who just learns differently. He's a Pisces, and I'm like, you are a fish trying to climb a tree in the system. That's what it felt like for our entire education system. And some things he rocked, and some teachers were amazing as far as just seeing his brilliance and saying, all right, so you just take tests. You're not going to do any homework, because he's not going to do the homework anyway. And so then he did. We had, you know, the 504, I think it was, where we can have modified so that he can, because he always passed everything. He didn't need anything more than that. You know, he just needed some sort of modification to say, yep, he's not going to return the homework. And even if he does it, he'll do it, but he wouldn't turn it in. Like, it's just that final follow through, right? So that was really frustrating from a mom's perspective. And then again, the things I've learned, what do we really need to be controlling here? And the fact that control is just an illusion. Right. From the standpoint of motherhood, absolutely. What do these kids have to teach us?
Yeah, they are by far our greatest teachers. And it's beautiful and humbling and all of the things rolled into one, because it's a constant learning. And I just told my daughter not too long ago, I saw something that came across, I don't know, Instagram, whatever, I shared it with her, just about how she's my first. So you're going to see all the mistakes. You're going to see a type of neuroticism that your younger sibling's not going to see. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. And thank
you. I feel like I shared that with Cooper as well. Yeah. I feel like there was something about that. Like, yeah, you've seen me.
Yeah. Right.
And we don't know. And we, you know, it's like they signed up to be our first to help us learn. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Like, right. That's how I take it. I'm like, oof, it's hard. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Big, big sacrifice on their part.
Exactly.
Okay. So when you were going through all of this with him, what in your professional life was taking place within kind of your journey that led you to where you are now?
So when I started teaching, I worked nights for 16 years, and I loved working nights at the hospital. That was great. We had so much fun and took care of the patients, and I don't do well being micromanaged. And so it was a good spot for me to be, because I got to do my work and I got to not be getting in trouble, right? Cooper making a few more things for me than just ADHD. And then when the kids were at the point where we had moved and, you know, the divorce was final, it was kind of clear that I probably should find a day job, because it was really hard to figure out, like, it was uncertainty for them, right? Like, it felt great for me because I don't want to work Monday through Friday. I want the flexibility and all those things, but it wasn't working for them. Sure. And so we had nannies come in and whatnot. And when the one nanny, I found out Cooper had watched Psycho on Netflix. And I'm like, okay, it's time for mom to go to days. And again, she didn't even know, right? Like, it's just, he's sneaky like that. Like, okay. Because then, you know, hey, mom, did you know the bathtub scene? Da, 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 da. I'm like, yeah, this is not okay, kid. So I, shortly after that, took a teaching position and in the respiratory care program, and really enjoyed that a ton. What came out during that is that what I'm doing with these students is coaching them, more so than teaching them how to be a respiratory therapist. Mm. And to me at that point, I had been through enough to know you have to know yourself in order to take care of others. And a lot of people in the profession just want to give and right the wrongs and whatnot. It's like, to be sustainable, you have to know who you are and how to take care of yourself to take care of anybody else. Mm-hmm. So that was really important. And so I was really, you know, focused on the coaching side of things. And again, it's like, I'm not getting paid to do, you know, coaching. I'm getting paid to teach them about, you know, alveolar ventilation, which is really important as well if you're running a ventilator. So that was kind of an interesting. So, and anyway, had done a lot to the program, was very proud of what we had created there. It was a wonderful thing. I had great people that I was surrounded with, and the students were amazing. It was super fun. And then again, it came back to the kids need something different, which really meant I needed something different because they are a reflection of me, right? Like, at this point, I'm realizing that. So, okay, we're gonna shift again. And so I ended up going back into the hospital doing a pulmonary rehab and diagnostics position for a couple of years. And that let me have the schedule that I wanted so that I could be at all of their sporting events and be home at night. And it just, it all worked. I wasn't Monday through Friday, you know, answering emails. And you know how it is as a teacher, you're always worried about this kid that you know, you can see they're hurting and they're not hearing you. And, you know, that was kind of across the board with my kids and with the kids. Like, I was like, they're my kids up during the day and then my kids at night. I'm like, my kids at night need to know I'm here too. Mm-hmm. My kids need to feel that, what I'm giving these kids. So I stepped away again. I thought for them, but really it was for me. It's always for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's with, so you were dealing with respiratory and pulmonary. Was this all before COVID?
So that was right before COVID. Yeah.
Did you step away from that before COVID?
So I was there for some of it. I left in 2021. November 2021. And again, when they say you create your reality, like I, as a respiratory therapist, I feel horrible being like, I was immune to all of that. I did not experience what all of my coworkers were experiencing. Part of it was that that's not my reality. And good luck trying to change my reality because I set my reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just, it didn't affect me. I, again, having conversations with the kids, somebody we know will probably die from COVID. Like, and again, going into the hospital, the uncertainty, but again, I know who I am. I know what I need to do to stay safe and I know how to stay healthy. It's okay. These are the things that nobody was talking about, right? Like, are you eating right? Are you, you know, are you moving your body so that you can stay healthy? What do you do to build your immune system? Mm-hmm. How often did you hear about you can increase your T cells by exercising?
Right.
That's how they're talking about on the news.
Right. Or by D.
Exactly. Yes. That's a huge one. Like, just get outside, people.
Yeah.
So during that time, that was, again, I had a different perspective, as I often do from most. But I see both sides and I could see where they were coming from. But when you lead from fear, it usually doesn't. You got to lead from love, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. that was a big lesson.
Were there specific things that led you to walk away from your position that came about from that time?
So at the time when I was still working there, I was working with the patients that were coming out of the ICU, right? So I was seeing patients go home, and that was powerful, right?
Mm-hmm.
The majority of people that have burnout, we're seeing them coming in and dying. So it's a very different experience for where I was located on the timeline for taking care of these patients. But for me, what happened is that these patients that I was doing pulmonary rehab with, I was empowering them. So most of them had surgery or like a thoracic type surgery. And I can see that they're not breathing, you know, you're not breathing right. You're having pain. What happens when you have pain? Clamp up. If you're clamped up, you can't be taking a deep breath. And if you can't take a deep breath, you're not moving your diaphragm. If you're not pumping your diaphragm, you're messing with everything else, right? Like, there's all of these things that I understand the transition between. And so I would just do these simple breath techniques with them. And it was really awesome. And they liked it. And they felt empowered. And, you know, everyone's like, well, that's nice, Anna. You know, yeah, okay. Like, what do you want us to do, right? It's not like it was making any money on it. It's not going to, right? Like, this is just empowering people. So yeah, go ahead. That's great. So at the time I was frustrated because I wanted more, right? I want to empower people. And so I ended up leaving, one, because it wasn't getting any traction. And two, I found a company that would potentially be able to get some traction in because they do telehealth and you can reach a lot more people. So that was an opportunity for me to help grow that. Meanwhile, still growing Awaken with Anna, right? Like, that was always the back side hustle, if you will, mm-hmm. always.
Yeah. So when did you start your, what was previously a side hustle? When did you start Awaken with Anna?
Honestly, I don't even know the date. I feel like probably at least 3-4 years ago. I feel like the name came maybe 2021.
Okay.
That was like official. Like, I've always been working towards always doing this or always having side gigs. Like, I have the tools. Like, I would sell oils. I would do the Qi machine. I would have all these things available for people to use. But to actually pair it with the coaching was in 2017, 2018, I did my coaching program. and then worked with Vanessa and did a lot of different programs like that to mm-hmm. get to the space where, what do I want? What do I want to do? Like trying to figure that piece out was huge.
Did you do Activate? Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
I did. Yep.
So a shout out to Vanessa and she was on a earlier episode. So I encourage people to check that out and her Activate program. Yeah. Yes. I mean,
I did her solution container last year for her beta group as well. Amazing. Very, very great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of entrepreneurs that were born from Activate. So pretty cool.
Absolutely.
People following their passion.
So back to your question though, because I didn't get to finish it. So I'm teaching people to be empowered by their choices, right? And then it comes along with the mandate. And so I need to stand in my integrity. I know we can be healthy. I know I don't need to have this because I know how to protect myself, right? And then it's the, what about protecting everybody else? Like that was, we're always flipping the script, right? Like I can't protect everybody else. They have to protect themselves. And so that wasn't the reason for leaving, but it certainly helped me leave easier. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep.
I really just stood in like, it doesn't feel right for me to tell people I need you to breathe. I need you to eat right, get some sunshine, all of those things. And then for me to say, oh, but I need to protect you from me. So I'm going to do this because it didn't feel like I needed to do that. Mm-hmm. So it did, again, I didn't have the reality that most people had with that conversation. We just didn't talk about it. People just knew, well, she probably doesn't because she does things a little different.
Yeah.
So, and so if they ask, I would tell them, like, I believe that I can do this way. And of course, yes, everybody got COVID. I got COVID and I mm-hmm. recovered very quickly when I did get it. And, you know, the people that did get it, did get the vaccines and the shots, they got it too. Like, that's the hard part is that I don't want that to be the conversation. I want the conversation to shift to not if you did or did not, but rather, what are you doing to stay healthy in today, right now in this moment?
Absolutely. I think one of the best things we can learn from that whole experience is that nobody can protect us from taking care of ourselves. We have to be constantly, you know, being mindful of the nutritious foods that we're eating, the sleep that we're getting, the exercise that we're getting, the sunlight that we're getting, and nothing outside of ourselves is going to change what we do or don't do when it comes down to like putting everybody in the same pool. I mean, I get that obviously things happen beyond our control, but when we saw that this specific virus was attacking people with comorbidities, and that is who was getting really sick. Man, if that's not a wake up call to everybody to get yourself healthy, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Like, and I honestly came from the mindset that if you believe it will help you, then please get it. If you believe that that will protect you, then you need to get it. Yes. I want to empower you in your choice, whether you choose to get it or choose not to get it. If you don't get it because you're scared of what might happen, if you don't get it, I'm choosing not to get it because I know what my body can do and how amazing it is and how to protect it. On the flip side of that, if you're choosing out of fear, it's always going to cause trouble, right? Like that's the reality of it. If you are getting it because you're fearful or you're not getting it because you're fearful, that's the same coin, right?
It is. And I think that was so hard for people because to everybody's credit, I mean, they did a fantastic job of instilling fear in everybody throughout that whole time. And you really had to hold your energy and recognize how powerful our immune systems are. And obviously now we've seen the data of how little chance it was deadly to begin with. But I mean, it is... It's a situation that I think has caused so many people to just, man, did we actually go through that? And like, I am just so hopeful that the next time around, people are going to operate totally differently. Mm-hmm. Not going to be running to Costco to buy out all the toilet paper. Like, that was a weird thing.
Yeah.
But it is fascinating.
That's the power of uncertainty and fear. And if you don't lean into the fear to see what am I not seeing that I need to look into?
Yeah.
As opposed to, they tell me this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do. Mm-hmm. It's very different when you lean in and can look around, as opposed, you know, just stick your head in the door and look around to see what's making sense and what's not, so I can look into that for myself to know how it resonates within me, as opposed to, oh, I'm out. I'm not doing it because so-and-so said to do it. Like, again, why? You have to know your why behind, and then what makes sense for you.
Yeah.
And nobody can answer that except for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the trouble, is that the conversations that were being had, people didn't know, and they're supposed to be experts. So instead of saying, I don't know, we're following what somebody else told us to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It got to be such a gross time in society, just the way that people treated one another for whatever decision that they made. And I don't know, I guess I was super surprised by how ugly humanity got in a time when, in a time when you'd think that people would lean in and come together, you know, and we did see some of that for sure, but it was a lot of just judgment and finger pointing and anger and shaming. Mm-hmm. And all of that is on that low vibration, the same as fear. And so when you operate out of fear, anger and shame and all those are going to be right there with you. And,
man. And guess what you get more of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More shame.
Yeah.
More anger. And again, when you're constantly filled with shame, it's really hard to make a different choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So you exited out of that. And I'm sure with mixed feelings, because it was a lot of,
again, my experience is protected compared to the people, like I chose to leave to do a new pursuit so that I could be doing this breath work and empowering.
Yeah.
Others, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And, with what you are doing now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, I think if I'm correct, you do the tapping.
No. Well, I mean, I have done tapping, but
Okay. No. All right. It said something.
That's my friend Amy.
What's that?
So vibroacoustic. Vibroacoustic therapy. Okay. Yes.
So this is like the sound bowls.
No. This is a, it's so interesting. So vibroacoustic therapy, In Harmony is the company that has the tech that I use for my vibroacoustic therapy. So it, right now I have a cushion. I'm in the process of purchasing a mat so people can lay down and do it comfortably. My friend Stephanie in the cities at Nirvana Wellness, she's actually got the amazing bed. I strongly suggest people to go check it out. So What we're doing with this technology is that it helps you to drop into meditation more quickly. It's marketed for relaxation, but it's so much more than that. When you understand the power that it is, and there's certifications that you can take so that you're able to facilitate that. So at its core, like kind of on the surface, if you will, let's just start with the surface part. You sit on this tech, which is a meditation cushion that's super comfortable to sit on, or the beds, whatever it is. They have a transducer in them that's vibrating. That vibration is at a lower frequency so that your body can relax. So you've heard of Mother Earth's pulse, or the resonance is 7.83 hertz, right? So this technology that you're using, this tech, the hertz are between 20 and 120, I believe. I'd have to double check that. But they're very low vibrations, so it's calming your body down, okay? Mm. So it's vibrating to music that's set at a set frequency. So you can choose, just like, you know, 528 is the love frequency. There's different types of frequencies that are out there. So it's kind of pairing those two together. And then there's another adjunct you can add on to that, which is called brain tap. And that is when you're adding the lights and the binaural beats with it.
Oh, okay.
So it's truly like kind of an all cocoon type experience for you to help reset your central nervous system.
Mm.
Yeah. It's very relaxing.
Yeah.
The first time I was on one was down in Iowa, and it was just like within minutes, like, I need this. I need it to get it into the schools. We need to get it into these. And that was before I even knew anything about it. My nieces and nephews, when they come over, they love it. They like fight over who's going to get on it first. And they just sit there and listen to the headsets and, you know, listen for just a couple minutes, and then they go back off and come back and do it again. So it's really relaxing. And I feel like it's that if you were to go for, like, how do you feel when you're by the beach?
Very relaxed, very calm.
When you go out for a walk in nature, like on the trails as opposed to, you know, the bike path.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very.
So like the forest bathing, like, again, those environments don't have all the negative positive ion charges to be stressing your body out. And so you do feel very relaxed when you're at the ocean. It has a lower frequency rate.
Mm.
So then that's kind of what we're simulating with this tech, is that it feels very relaxing. Like, hey, you just went for a walk, or you're sitting at the beach. And again, there are sounds you can listen to, so it feels like you're at the beach.
So. That is so cool. Okay. So what is the duration that's recommended, or when do people see the best benefits? How long?
So 23 minutes, it can be therapeutic. So that's the In Harmony tech and how they utilize it. And then there's also Kate Kunkel, was my instructor for my training for the vibroacoustic therapy. And she does a lot with brain health. And so there's specific frequencies that are mono frequencies, so that you can help decrease symptoms of certain things like dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. Wow. These things are really powerful to help with symptoms. It's not diagnosing, treating, or curing. There's nothing like that. But there is literature back 40-some years that talks about the power of frequency and sound and how it actually can help with symptoms for different things. That's where I'm moving into.
Yeah, so
that
cool.
Space. So when I get the bed, hopefully I'll be visiting some nursing homes and skilled facilities for people to feel that and just kind of see, you know, how people do with that. I think it would be really interesting. My grandma died of Alzheimer's. It's very near and dear to my heart. Not of Alzheimer's, but, you know, she had Alzheimer's. Yeah. That was really hard. And anything that we can do to help the families support them, I think, is really powerful. And again, great for the patient, right? But also great for the family,
right?
Because we're all stressed out, and that stress lives in our body, which is why I love breath work so much, because you can release it quickly with breath.
You spoke to how this helps the symptoms. And so the first thing I was thinking of, like a very symptomatic thing, is Tourette's syndrome. Has this been used to help with Tourette's syndrome?
I would have to look up on that. I haven't had anyone that I've done that with. Been using calming. It specifically for relaxation as opposed to the actual symptom type thing.
Okay. Okay. Well, that would be interesting to know. I mean, I think anything that calms the nervous system that much would be, could help in that way. Okay. So what is that called?
So In Harmony is the tech. Okay. And then, they have a couple different type of pieces of furniture is what they refer to. Meditation furniture is how they're referring to them. And there's different companies out there. And to me, again, like, I don't care what essential oils you use if you're using them correctly, right? So the tech itself isn't, it's what you do with it and how does it help you, right? How is it helping you?
Cool. So are you taking clients through a In Harmony session? Are you utilizing this now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, cool. So how is it, like a 25-minute session, an hour session?
So right now it's I just have the cushion. And to me, that it's hard to sit on it for extended periods of time. So usually it's 20. I recommend the 23 if they're able to sit. We, you know, prop them up on pillows and get them comfortable, of course. But once I get the bed, that's going to shift, I think, and that would be much better. And that's hopefully going to be in May that I'll have all of that set up ready to go.
Oh, very cool. Okay, so Is that the main modality that you use? I know you're a breath work coach as well, correct?
So yes. So right now I've really been focused on breath, doing retreats and workshops. And that is probably at my core and always will be at my core is the breath. Because anytime you come in for anything, I do a breath assessment on you. I mean, you're going to get that if you do in harmony. We're going to do a breath assessment so that you can feel, so that you can catch yourself in creating this awareness throughout your week before you come back for your next in harmony session, right? There's things that you can do and become aware of so that you truly can make different choices, so that you can move in the direction that you're looking for better health and wellness.
So I know I have talked about this in a few episodes before, and breath work is one of the things that has helped really reduce my fear of, say, public speaking when I've been in interviews before, when I know it's going to like live interviews. And I've done the breath work before then, and it's been a game changer. Where do you see people's like breath? I don't know if ability is the right word, but like, how are people typically breathing when you first see them? Like, I imagine it's more shallow or people aren't practicing. Unless I'm so very mindful of it, I know I'm not. So.
Right. And even for me, I know when I'm doing assessments on people and I still could catch myself being like, yeah, that's not right. What's stressing you out, girl? Like, I can feel it. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing when I was in the hospital and doing. So to me, there's two separate things here. So there's breath work, right? Which is what we see all over Instagram. It's the Wim Hof. It's the 5-7-8. It's the box breathing. It's that, you know, there's all these different modalities for breath work. And these are hacks for you to do in this situation so that you can do them. So that's great to do if you're in a healthy state, because if you're not in a healthy state, you can't remember to do them because you haven't been practicing them. So it really is a practice and consistency to be doing those so that when you need to access them, it's going to help you in that moment. Mm-hmm. But what I'm doing during a breath journey is it's different than that. So just like if you were to do a sauna or a cold plunge, and that stress that you're creating in your body during those minutes that you're doing that is what we're doing during a breath journey. And that's why it's different. It's very powerful. And what I love most about it and what I've heard clients say is that I didn't have to talk about it. I just got to release it. Right? So that's the difference between the two. I teach everybody, I call it my expansion breath. It's a variation of all these other breaths, right? That's breath work. To me, everybody gets the expansion breath. Mm-hmm. But the actual journey is something something's been weighing you down. And it comes off in layers. And that's why it's powerful to do it again. So I was in Savage last weekend at Purple Lotus. And we're doing a workshop, like a 2-session workshop with a support in between, so you can see how things are coming up and you can do this breath on your own. And then we're going to come back together next month to be able to see what shifted and see how your breath has changed so that you can continue on that path to evolving into releasing what isn't serving you, right? And actually calling in that love and compassion for ourselves. Mm. So many times we're like, you know, we're doing this technique so that I can go on the stage and do it. And then as soon as you're done on stage, you feel great, right? And you don't have to worry about it anymore. But you have access to it again when you have your next life that you need to access it, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit different. So I think of we have our physical bodies, we have our emotional bodies, our energetic bodies, and we have our spiritual bodies. And so a breath journey to me is really creating harmony between all three of them, so that you can feel from that space of harmony and resonate at that higher frequency. Sometimes people just have a physical release. Sometimes they have an emotional release. And sometimes they actually have a spiritual experience. It really just depends on what they're ready for and what every experience is so different. Every single one is so different. I've never had two that were even similar. So
yeah,
it's really powerful.
I can imagine what a physical release would look like, or an emotional release if they start crying. What does a spiritual release look like in a breath journey?
So it's more of an experience than a release, if you will. thought I needed everything, but apparently not. It's just what they're experiencing. And that's what's awesome about breathwork. There's nothing that I am doing. There's nothing. I'm just here holding space for them to feel safe enough to go to these spaces, if it's physical, emotional, or spiritual. Mm. So they have that space and that freedom to release whatever it is that needs to be released or have access to, I should say.
Yeah, you said something in there I wanted to come back to because it was, I think a lot of people that I know that have tried therapy and it didn't work for them, or they might have tried Al-Anon or, you know, some other thing where they're having to share. It just wasn't comfortable for them to share and like didn't serve them. I think it's so wonderful that we have access to these modalities that allow us to release things without really having to psychoanalyze them. Because I think our society has become a little too hyper-focused on like the why behind everything, almost to a fault. I think it's important to get context as to why we might feel some way, but there's a difference between having context like, okay, I might be this way because this may have contributed to the way that I am, something in my childhood, something out in society, whatever. It's good to get that context, but then all too often it keeps people in this loop of victimhood where they're just, yes. And then it's their story. Yeah. And I know of, you know, nothing against therapy because I know it's very beneficial for so many, but I do know that that can happen in therapy where you're kind of in this loop where you are identifying yourself so much with a situation or, something that has happened that I just don't think that's healthy in moving forward.
There's definitely a place, and it's when people are ready, right? The teacher appears, whether it's for therapy or breath or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. I think it's more about the how than the why. And I love asking why. I think there's major power in understanding why. Like that creates this wisdom if you know how to move forward from that. But it's very limiting if you just stay in the why and want to just keep circling in the why, right? To understand why. Well, I need to know more. And I'm guilty of that too, right? But then when you can figure out, okay, this is why, now how? I'm at that how point. And then the how is to release it. Well, how do you release it? Well, there's lots of things that you can do and what's going to work best for you, right? Like it's understanding that. Mm-hmm. And really letting, I know what you're saying about the therapy. Like therapy is, I'm like, everyone should have done therapy at some point in their life. It was very valuable for me. And at the time, that's what I needed. But now I'm to the point where I need the breath because I understand the why and I need to just release it with the breath. Mm-hmm. And then I can get to greater depths with that because you've released that. So you have the space now to bring in what's next. As Vanessa talks about the spiral, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think it obviously depends on the therapist too. I know of, there's a book out right now by Abigail Schreier called Bad Therapy. Brings up a lot of great points, some of which I don't agree with. She doesn't believe in ancestral trauma. I don't know if she knows about epigenetics or if just is ignoring all of that work, but I definitely believe that traumas, you know, gets locked in our cells and it's up to us to release them. I definitely don't agree with everything, but she does speak to the fact that we are in this period of time where we aren't moving past the why to the now what, to the how, like you said. And I think that is just the missing link. Like, of course, context is so important to understanding anything and being able to move forward. So long as we just don't get stuck there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know, like when I did, you know, Chris's detox class, like I remember just loving, she tells us why. Mm-hmm. And if you tell me why, I can believe it. And then I know what I need to do. Like, there is so much power in understanding the why, so that for me, right, like as she's talking about all these different things, then instead of just, well, this is what you need to do. Because if you tell me what to do, I'm going to say, well, I don't really want to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way. And then I'm still off course, right? But if you tell me why, then I do get to do it my way, because I understand why and how it fits with where I'm at in my life. Most people aren't at a point in their lives where they can be told, if they want to be told what to do, because they're so lost and disconnected that they don't know how to do that. Mm. So then, well, here's your script. Well, that's not how I work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another point I was going to make about that, and I forgot what it was.
Well, and I think we're definitely on the same page with that. And maybe I didn't articulate it great out of the gate, but yes, it is, why is essential, and moving past the why to the, okay, now what are we going to do about it, is I think what's missing. It's just missing in society for a lot of people.
It is. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Like when you look in the mirror, who do you see? What do you like? Like I always ask people, what do you love about yourself today? Most people are like, what? Like, can I give you a hug? They're like, no, no, you cannot. Because they know if I'm going to hug you, I might make you cry, right? Because I'm going to see you. And when mm-hmm. I see you, you feel exposed because mm-hmm. you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. It's that I see the potential in you. I see your hurt. I see what you're going through. And then when you are in a safe space, like obviously I think of, there was some students I would have, and they're like, no, you cannot hug me. No, don't touch me. I'm like, but I feel like you need a hug right now. Can I give you a hug? No, don't you dare to. Oh, okay. Okay. Right. Like it's one of those things, but now it's like everybody after breath, may I give you a hug? And like, yeah. Mm. And it's like, thank you. I have not been hugged and held and feel this safe. Like there's just something so beautiful about that.
Yeah. You know, I miss that
cocoon, if you will, so that you can go inside and explore what's going on safely mm-hmm. because it's pretty scary, you know? So, oh, that was what I kind of have to ask you. Okay. So Gabor Mate, are you familiar with
yeah.
his work?
Oh yeah.
I love his work.
too.
I saw him speak here in Rochester. It's probably around, I think 2016, 2017. And that really resonated with me with addictions, what he was saying and how, and I was just like, wow, finally a different perspective that feels right as opposed to all these other things. So
yeah.
Really powerful.
Can you speak to that a little bit, what you learned from him, just for our listeners, if they're not familiar with Gabor?
Yeah. So everything, it's that resonance. So when babies are crying, going to them as opposed to the cry it out method. And now I am not, by any means, there's no judgment here. We do what we know to do in those moments. And when we know better, we can do better. And it was like, my kids were all grown up. They weren't crying it out anymore.
I learned that by the time. Too late. And yes,
yeah,
going, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one thing. And I talk about that often. Like during the divorce, like we weren't nice to each other, right? Like he's not a bad person at all. He's a decent human. So am I. But when I was with him, I didn't like myself. And so I was mean, right? Because we were in these situations. And the kids pick up on that environment. They're always going to resonate with the safe person in the house, which is your parents, right? So it's like, what kind of environment were we creating? And we had a loving, like, we were loving people. Like, right. They had a lot of fun. They had everything they needed, right? And then I look and I'm like, well... Did they though? Like, did they feel safe? I thought they were safe, but did they feel safe? So this is I have a really great example of this. So this is one of those examples, and this was before I found Gabor Mate, of course, but Oscar, who you met a few minutes ago, yeah. The kids wanted, my daughter wanted a dog. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've always wanted a dog as well. So this sounds great, right? We're gonna get a dog. And so I have a family friend that's fostering, and we go to the house to check it out right before Christmas. This is awesome. I don't have to buy Christmas gifts. We're going to get a dog. Mm-hmm. And we went to the house, and Delaney and I went into the kitchen and got down on the floor and started playing with the dog right away. And Cooper stood on the step. He would not go see the dog. Mm-hmm. Like this is our, it was discussed. This is going to be a family pet. We're all going to be responsible for it. Like this is teaching responsibility to my kids, right? This will be good for everybody. We're at the ages of like 11 and 9, right? This is what we need. for that next level of responsibility in our house. And everybody wants it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get into the car and Coop's like, yeah, not really feeling it, whatever. So I had both kids write on a piece of paper when we got back to my parents. We were staying with my parents. Delaney, why do you want the dog? Because she's devastated because Cooper doesn't want the dog. And Cooper is like, I don't want the dog. It's like, we all have to agree on this. This is a family decision. This is, everybody has to do it, right? So it's understanding that why Delaney wants the dog and why Cooper doesn't want the dog. Okay. And why I think it's good for the kids to have a dog, right? Because I want a dog. I want somebody to walk with, right?
Right.
So I can go running at night. Well, I got a dog who's scared of the dark, so it doesn't happen. Anyway, the point is that dog fell through because of what Delaney wrote on hers and what Cooper wrote on his paper was very clear. We have some more work to do for us to heal before we can get a dog. Mm. So what Delaney is writing is that she wants someone to sleep with. She wants somebody to cuddle with, like all of these things. She wants to feel love from the dog, right? The dog's going to give that what she's missing. And Cooper, he wants to not be responsible because what if something happens to the dog? He can't handle that responsibility because he's going to get in trouble, right? So again, two very different yin-yang approaches here. It's like, okay, I guess we're not getting a dog yet. Mm-hmm. So it was a year later and then we got Oscar. So, and again, it was proposed differently then because at that time, this is a family dog, this is the family pet, we're all going to be responsible. And then it shifted to Delaney wants the dog. It's Delaney's responsibility, which means mom's responsibility, right? Let's be real. Right. But Cooper is great about helping out, but he knows it's Delaney's responsibility and he'll help out if you ask him. Sure. But it's Delaney's responsibility because it's her dog. And then it was proposed differently so that everybody was on board with us getting the dog. So it shifted, right? They needed more time. I needed more time to understand what their needs were that weren't being met.
Yeah.
Right? So that was really like another, okay, back to the drawing board. More work to do. Let's go.
Right.
Who do we need to be following? Who do we need to be seeing? What do we need to be doing? It's like, no. Just be present with them.
Yeah. Just listen. Give them space. Mm-hmm.
They're telling you exactly what you need to know. And we don't listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
He did the Wisdom of Truth. I think that's what it was called. Wisdom of Truth. Okay. Did you see that movie that he produced?
No.
I think it's called The Wisdom. I can look it up and send it to you. I think it's called The Wisdom of Truth. Or Wisdom of Trauma. That's what it's called. Really, really powerful stuff in there. He'll talk about how, really just everybody should watch it. I feel like it's like just available now. It was like a thing that you had to purchase and then it was free after a amount of time or something like that. It was a couple of years. It was probably actually 3 years ago.
Okay.
I bet it's been out 3 years now. Wisdom of Trauma. And he talks about inmates and why they're inmates and how you just see things differently. It's a different perspective of, it isn't necessarily like the crime that they committed as opposed to their childhood and what wasn't happening for them to feel safe. And so again, it's a reaction. It's the epigenetics is really what he focuses on, which is why I always default to what's going on in the environment.
Right.
Do they feel safe? Do they feel loved? Do they feel seen? And that's really been coming up a lot lately. I feel like is that being seen, nobody feels seen.
It's huge. Yeah, I think it's our greatest need to just feel seen. And I think it always explained to me why a lot of the students that I taught would act out, because even if they were being seen for a negative reaction, it was still a reaction. It's such a powerful basic human need that unfortunately so many.
And it goes back to there's one of you in a classroom full of, 25 to 30 kids.
Right.
How do they get to be seen by you throughout that day? Like, we used to have a village to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not getting it at school and they're not getting it at home, where else are they going? And again, the reflection piece, which is huge. What's being reflected? Well, if you're only getting the reflection back from your peers, it's from that level of connection that is limiting you because of their experiences are similar to yours. as opposed to an adult, a parent, someone that's coming from the love and understanding that, hey, this is just something you're going through right now. You know, I'm here for you, holding that space for them.
Yeah. Will you say that again? It is, because that was poignant.
I'm horrible about like, remembering hey, what I say.
Okay.
Would yeah, what did I say? the being seen.
Yeah.
if they're, we used to be seen in the village. Like yeah. It's not the responsibility of one person to see you.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's your, so we're in a single parent household. My kids get me. They get their teachers at school, but they may or may not be connected, right? Mm-hmm. Fourth grade Google was connected, you know. Senior year, there's maybe one or two. You know what I mean? Like, it's just where they're at as well. But what is being reflected back to you?
Yeah.
And if you're getting reflected back to you, what isn't healthy or isn't in your best interest or isn't challenging you to think differently, then that could shift. It limits us again, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't allow the trust. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on that note, I'm constantly thinking about how, what an insurmountable task teachers have. And like, I knew it was a big task when I was doing it, but like, just even being outside of it for a few years and thinking about, oh gosh, yeah, okay, so you have 30 some kids in the classroom, and sometimes it's upwards of that, and you want to try to make a connection with each one of those kiddos every day, plus you have a ton of stuff to get through. And this isn't just like in a elementary, but middle school and high school, like you want to make a connection with those kids every single day they come in and out of your classroom. And yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot of weight on one person.
It is.
And then for you to go home to your family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you're constantly trying to be like the generator, like the lifting people up, and you come home and most have families to come home to, and then it's rinse and repeat. You're doing it again. Yeah. Take care of our teachers, everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you do the, and I know it's not breath work, so it is a breathing journey you take.
So I just refer to it as breath.
Breath. Okay.
It's just breath. It's like a breath session, a breath mini journey is what I'm doing. Kind of that's what I've been sharing. Vanessa had challenged me that back in October. And so we started doing every Sunday night these breath journeys. And that has, now I'm up in the cities at Nirvana Wellness and Purple Lotus and Savage. And, you know, adding on to it, like just it's evolving so naturally that we're doing these breath sessions, which are powerful. And then while we're saying, okay, let's create this awareness in between, let's be journaling, let's take some time to connect and see how you're doing. Because when you just do an experience, oh, that felt great, okay. As opposed to when you're meditating consistently. I know the difference. Right. You know, 100%. It's so easy to be like, oh, I can take the day off. And then it's like 3 weeks later, oh, yeah. I probably should get back to that. I am feeling it now. I always equate it to, it's no different than when you're having a salad. Like if you eat a salad every day, you're like, you don't notice anything. But as soon as you stop, then you start eating crappy food. And then you realize, oh, I guess I do need that.
Yeah. Right. Need like those greens again. That.
Right. And so where are you feeling it in your body? So really the breath journeys, looking at to see where your breath is, where are you feeling that, and listen to your body before we're listening to our mind. That's the flip that I would love to see happen. Yeah. I always talk about the monkey mind because I started telling you about my monkey mind. It sits and it spins, right? And it's spinning in either what I cannot change in the past or what I cannot control in the future. And the more it spins out there, it just, the weight, right?
Yeah.
And the way to stop that is with your breath. That's why when you go on stage, you're not thinking, or, you know, when you're doing your live speaking engagements, you came back into your body with your breath. And when you're in your body, you can move forward in action.
Right.
So that's the piece that's so valuable with that. And those, this and that, they melt away a little bit. right? So it's not as heavy on you. I equate it to if I'm holding a glass of water on each hand, as opposed to if I'm holding it near my chest. Mm. It's not as heavy when it's near me, right? When it's on me, in me, as opposed to outside of me. So a lot of those things we can't control or change anyway. Right. So if you're, and you know, I always talk to just say, oh, Anna said I'm supposed to breathe. When I have those ruminating thoughts too, right? I'm spinning in them all the time. Yes, Amanda. Yeah. it's sitting and spinning. So it's that, but you can catch yourself and be like, why am I thinking about this again? I'm going to go to a breath, and then doing whatever type of breath you want. There's so many different ones out there. I don't want to say what's best for you. I want people to explore some and try them. The breath that I like to do, what I call, it's an expansion breath. Are you willing to do it with me?
Yes.
It's super easy.
Do I sit or I'm
standing? Yeah, you can just stay sitting. Yeah.
Well, I'm standing.
I won't be able to see very well. Oh, you're standing.
I'm standing. Nice.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, that's fine. Well, it's just a hand on your chest and a hand on your belly. And then close your eyes down. I just want you to notice, where do you feel your breath? You're just noticing it. There's no judgment around it. Just where do you notice it? And then I want you to think about, if your chin is 10 and your belly button is 0, and you were to draw a line from your chin to your belly button, what number would you rate with the depth of your breath? Again, you don't need to tell us unless you want to. It's just noticing where that's at. Now we're going to do 6 breaths. We're going to expand your lung capacity. So I want you to take a deep breath in. Holding at the top of the inhale. 1, 2, and I want you to drop your jaw and say, ah. Ah. Beautiful. Full exhale. Now take another deep breath in. Holding at the top of the inhale. 1, 2, and releasing with a sigh. Full exhale. And deep breath in. Holding at the top of the inhale. 1, 2, 3 now, and release with sound. And one more for me. Deep breath in. Deepest breath you've taken yet. Holding 1, 2 for full expansion, and releasing the sound. I want you to keep your eyes closed. And just notice, what is the depth of your breath now? On the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being your chin and 1 being your belly button. Did you notice your breath get any deeper into your body?
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard not to, right?
I think I went from a 5 to a 10.
So 10 is your chin, though.
Okay.
So you want your deeper. So 0, yeah. Yeah, you can. I can tell that you're used to practicing breath because you have a good vital capacity, because you could take a large breath to even start.
Yeah.
So again, that's just my respiratory experience that I understand.
So 10 is your chin.
10 is your chin. So. It feels backwards to me, but I also don't know how else to explain it other than golf. So, but the point is that most people, if I get in the, especially when I'm taking care of patients, right? When you're with a patient, somebody that's struggling with their health or something that's stressing them out, they're breathing up here in their chest. And if I'm breathing up here from up here, that's fine. Your body's going to do what it needs to do. Your body is absolutely amazing. But over time, by not breathing deeper into your belly, or not using your diaphragm correctly, or not pumping, that's like your lymphatic pump is your diaphragm.
Mm-hmm.
Right, just like our heart's pumping out our blood around our bodies, diaphragm is pumping that oxygen around our bodies and moving your lymphatic system. Moving your lymphatic system makes everything work better, right? Like if you think about the inflammation that we have in our bodies right now from the foods that we're eating, lymphatic system is what's going to help move all that inflammation, right? That is the power of breathing in your belly where we're supposed to be. If we're working out, we naturally take deep breaths, but some people are, you know, still up here in their chest, even though they're working out. So how do you get into your belly, right? Is by expanding this breath. So the science behind that is when you take a deep breath in and you're holding at the top of the inhale, you have these little tiny ear sacs that look like grape clusters, and those pop open. So every time you pop one or two more open, or actually it's more than that, but the fact that you're expanding your next breath in to be more volume in means more volume out. You're getting deeper into each breath so that you can release more. Mm. So then if you know specifically I'm having pain in my shoulder, we're going to breathe into that shoulder during a breath journey so that you can release the pain that's associated in that shoulder. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Most people say, oh, I've got this little thing right here. And they're like, hey, that's gone, you know, because you're bringing love and compassion into our bodies and releasing what's no longer there. We don't need that pain there. Mm-hmm. We know over time that that dis-ease causes problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really beautiful practice.
So cool. And where can people find you to practice with you?
So I like to travel. I like to say I'm part gypsy. So as I said before, I'm up in the cities a couple times a month doing at Purple Lotus with Margot Kaufman and then Stephanie Canfield at Nirvana Wellness are the two locations up in the cities you can find me. I also will come to you if you want to do a party or something like that. We certainly can do that. And then I do have space here in Plainview, Minnesota as well. I have an office area that we do birth on Sunday evenings. And then pop-up experiences in Rochester, Minnesota as well. So just kind of exploring some different locations and seeing what works for people to be able to join.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to link all of that. And I can't wait for people to listen to what it is that you do and be able to check out your website and work with you.
Well, thank you. I also want to mention Evergreen Haven is in Spooner, Wisconsin, and we do retreats there. So that's another location. And that's Mindy Eichhoff and Cheryl Paulson that run that retreat area. And we had I think it was 2 weeks ago now we did it. That's like, you know, 2 to 3 days that we're together doing different things. So Really having that community and that connection and that container. It's powerful.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much. It's been so fun talking with you. We've been like virtually connected for so long, but now we're actually connected, which is so
fun. I was actually telling my sister, I'm like, I feel like I know her because I feel like whatever I would say, then Amanda would share with you. And then whatever I would hear what Lindsay said to Amanda, because I'm like the book and Amanda were in between us. Right. But it was always back and forth. So awesome.
So great.
To be like, yeah, such a process. So
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and at some point we'll have to chat as well because I need to do something with my universal expressions that I have.
So absolutely.
Literally the, you know, when you talk about COVID, I'm like, yep, I've wrote about these things.
Yes.
So the mama thing, like I've wrote about all of those. So,
yep. Really yep.
Powerful.
Well, let me know.
To be journaling and writing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someday.
Yes. Yes. And I look forward to when we can see each other in person and come in for a squeeze. So
that would be fantastic. Yeah. Yes. I feel like there's another book coming from Amanda, so it'll probably happen soon.
I know. Little drops.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
There'll be something soon.
Yeah.